Chapter 27. The Tipsy Gelding. Matt didn't escape the camp without the Aes Sedai, of course. Bloody women. He rode down the ancient stone roadway, no longer followed by the band. He was, however, accompanied by the three Aes Sedai, two warders, five soldiers, Telmanus, a pack animal, and Tom. At least Aludra, Amathera, and Eginan hadn't insisted on coming. This group was too big as it was. The three needle pines guarded the road, smelling of pine sap, and the air was melodic with mountain finches' calls. It was still several hours until sundown. He halted the band near noon. He rode slightly ahead of the clustered Aes Sedai and warders. After he'd refused Jolene horses and funds, they hadn't been about to let him win another point. Not when they could force him to take them down to the village, where they could spend at least one night in an inn with soft beds and warm baths. He didn't argue too loudly. He hated to have more tongues wagging about the band, and women did gossip. Even Aes Sedai. But there was little chance of the band passing without causing a stir in the village anyway. If any Seanchan patrols made it through these twisting mountain paths, well, Matt would just have to keep the band on a steady pace northward, and that was that. No use crying about it. Besides, he was beginning to feel right again, riding Pips down that road, spring breeze crisp in the air. He'd taken to wearing one of his older coats, red with brown trim, unbuttoned to show his old tan shirt beneath. This was what it was about, traveling to new villages, throwing dice in the inns, pinching a few barmaids. He would not think of Tuon, flaming Seanchan. She'd be all right, wouldn't she? No, his hands almost itched to be at the dicing. It had been far too long since he'd sat down in a corner somewhere and thrown with the ordinary sort. They'd be a little dirtier of face and coarser of language, but as good of heart as any man. Better than most lords. Telmanus rode just ahead. He'd probably wish for a nicer tavern than Matt, a place to join a game of cards, rather than throwing dice. But they might not have much of a choice. The village was of decent size, probably worthy of being called a town, but was unlikely to have more than three or four inns. Their choices would be limited. Decent size, Matt thought, grinning to himself as he took off his hat and scratched at the back of his head. Hinderstap would only have three or four inns, and that made it a small town. Why, Matt could remember when he'd thought Barilon a large city, and it probably wasn't much larger than this Hinderstap. A horse pulled up beside him. Tom was looking at that blasted letter again. The lanky gleeman's face was thoughtful, his white hair stirring in the breeze, as he stared down at the words, as if he hadn't read them a thousand times already. "Why don't you put that away?" Matt said. Tom looked up. It had taken some talking to get the gleeman to come down to the village, but Tom needed it, needed some distraction. "I mean it, Tom," Matt said. "I know you're eager to go after Moiraine, but it'll be weeks before we can break away, and reading over those words won't do anything but make you anxious." Tom nodded and folded the paper with reverent fingers. "You're right, Matt. But I'd been carrying this letter for months. Now that I've shared it, I feel... well, I just want to be on with it." "I know," Matt said, looking up toward the horizon. "Moiraine. The Tower of Genjai." Matt almost felt as if he could see the building out there looming. That's where his path pointed, and Camelin was just a stepping stone along the way. If Moiraine was still alive... light, what would that mean? How would Rand react? The rescue was another reason Matt felt he needed a good night dicing. Why had he agreed to go with Tom into the tower? Those burning snakes and foxes? He had no desire to see them again. But he also couldn't let Tom go alone. There was an inevitability to it, as if a part of Matt had known all along that he had to go back and face those creatures again. They'd gotten the better of him twice now, and the eelfin had tied strings around his brain with those memories in his head. He had a debt to settle with them, that was for certain. Matt had little love for Moiraine, but he wouldn't leave her to them, no matter that she was Aes Sedai. Bloody ashes. He'd probably be tempted to ride in and save one of the Forsaken themselves if they were trapped there. And maybe one was. Lanfear had fallen through that same portal. Burnham, what would he do if he found her there? Would he really rescue her as well? You're a fool, Matrim Cawthon. Not a hero, just a fool. We'll get to Moraine, Tom, Matt said. You have my word, burn me. We'll find her. But we have to see the band someplace safe. And we need information. Bale Doman says he knows where the tower is, but I won't be comfortable until we can go to some large city and sniff for rumors and stories about this tower. Someone has to know something. Besides, we'll need supplies. And I doubt we'll find what we need in these mountain villages. We need to reach Camelin if possible, though maybe we'll stop at Four Kings on the way. Tom nodded, though Matt could see he chafed at leaving Moraine trapped, being tortured or who knows what. Tom's brilliant blue eyes got a far-off look to them. Why did he care so much? What was Moraine to him but another Aes Sedai, one of those who had cost the life of Tom's nephew? Burn it, Matt said. We're not supposed to be thinking about things like this, Tom. We're going to have a good night of dice and laughter. There'll probably be some time for a song or two as well. Tom nodded, face growing lighter. He had his harp case strapped to the back of his horse. It would be good to see him open it again.
You plan to try juggling for your supper again, apprentice? Tom asked, eyes twinkling.
Better than trying to play that blasted flute, Matt grumbled. Never was very good at that. Rand took to it right fine, though, didn't he?
Colors swirled in Matt's head, resolving to an image of Rand sitting alone in a room by himself. He sat splay-legged in a richly embroidered shirt, a coat of black and red tossed aside and crumpled next to the log wall beside him. Rand had one hand to his forehead as if trying to squeeze away the pain of a headache. His other was... That arm ended in a stump. The first time Matt had seen that, a few weeks back, it had shocked him. How had Rand lost the hand? The man barely seemed alive, propped up like that, unmoving. Though his lips did seem to be moving, mumbling or muttering. Light, Matt thought.
Burn you, what are you doing to yourself?
Well, at least Matt wasn't near him. Count your fortunes in that, Matt told himself. Life hadn't been so easy lately, but he could have been stuck near Rand. Sure, Rand was a friend, but Matt didn't mean to be there when Rand went insane and killed everyone he knew. There was friendship, and then there was stupidity. They'd fight together at the last battle, of course, no helping that. Matt just hoped to be on the other side of that battlefield from any Cyadine-wielding madmen.
All Rand, Tom said. That boy could have made a life for himself as a gleeman, I warrant. Maybe even a proper bard if he'd started when he was younger.
Matt shook his head, dispelling the vision.
Burn you, Rand, leave me alone.
Those were better days, weren't they, Matt?
Tom smiled.
The three of us traveling down the river Aranel.
Murdral chasing us for reasons unknown, Matt added grimly. Those days hadn't been so easy either. Dark friends trying to stab us in the back every time we turned around.
Better than Golom and Forsaken trying to kill us.
That's like saying you're grateful to have a noose around your neck instead of a sword in your gut.
At least you can escape the noose, Matt.
Tom knuckled his long white mustache.
Once the sword is stuck into you, there's not much you can do about it.
Matt hesitated, then found himself laughing. He rubbed at the scarf around his neck.
I suppose you're right at that, Tom. I suppose you're right. Well, for today, why don't we forget about all of that? We'll go back and pretend things are like they once were.
I don't know if that's possible, lad.
Sure it is, Matt said stubbornly.
Oh, Tom asked, amused. You're going to go back to thinking that old Tom Marilyn is the wisest, most well-traveled man you've ever known? You'll play the gawking peasant again, clinging to my coat every time we pass a village with more than one inn in it?
Here now, I wasn't so bad as all that.
I hasten to differ, Matt, Tom said, chuckling.
I don't remember much.
Matt scratched at his head again. But I do recall that Rand and I did right well for ourselves after we split up with you. We made it to Camlann, at least. Brought your flaming harp back to you unharmed, didn't we?
I noticed a few nicks in the frame.
Burn you, none of that, Matt said, pointing at him. Rand practically slept with that harp. Wouldn't think of selling it, even when we were so hungry we'd have gnawed on our own boots if we hadn't needed them to get to the next town.
Those days were fuzzy to Matt, full of holes, like an iron bucket left too long to rust. But he had pieced together some things. Tom chuckled.
We can't go back, Matt. The wheel is turned for better or worse. And it will keep on turning, as lights die and forests dim, storms call and skies break. Turn it will. The wheel is not hope, and the wheel does not care. The wheel simply is. But so long as it turns, folk may hope, folk may care. For with light that fades, another will eventually grow, and each storm that rages must eventually die. As long as the wheel turns. As long as it turns.
Matt guided Pips around a particularly deep cleft in the broken roadway. Ahead, Telmanis chatted with several of their guards.
That is the sound of a song about it, Tom.
Aye, Tom said, almost with a sigh. An old one, forgotten by most. I've discovered three versions of it, all with the same words set to different tunes. I guess the area has me thinking of it. It's said that Doriel herself penned the original poem.
The area? Matt said with surprise, glancing at the three needle pines.
Tom nodded, thoughtful.
This road is old, Matt. Ancient. Probably was here before the breaking. Landmarks like this have a tendency to find their way into songs and stories. I think this area is what was once called the Splintered Hills. If that's true, then we're in what was once Coromanda, right near the Eagle's Reaches. I bet you if we climbed a few of those taller hills, we'd find old fortifications.
And what does that have to do with Doriel? Matt asked, uncomfortably.
She'd been queen of Aridhol.
She visited here, Tom said, penned several of her finest poems in the Eagle's Reaches.
Burn me, Matt thought. I remember.
He remembered standing on the walls of a high fort, cold on the mountaintop, looking down at a long, twisting roadway, broken and shattered, and an army of men with violet pennants charging up the hillside into a rain of arrows. The Splintered Hills. A woman on the balcony. The queen herself. He shivered, banishing the memory. Aridhol had been one of the ancient nations that had stood long ago when Menethrin had been a power. The capital of Aridhol had another name. Shadarlogoth. Matt hadn't felt the pull of the ruby dagger in a very long time. He was nearly beginning to forget what it had been like to be tied to it, if it was possible to forget such a thing. But sometimes he remembered that ruby, red like his own blood, and the old lust, the old desire, would seep into him again. Matt shook his head, forcing down those memories. Burn it, he was supposed to be enjoying himself.
What a time we've had, Tom said idly. I feel old these days, Matt, like a faded rug hung out to dry in the wind, hinting of the colors it once showed so vibrantly. Sometimes I wonder if I'm any use to you anymore. You hardly seem to need me.
What? Of course I need you, Tom.
The aging gleeman eyed him.
The trouble with you, Matt, is that you're actually good at lying, unlike those other two boys.
I mean it. Burn me, but I do. I suppose you could run off and tell stories and travel like you used to. But things around here might run a lot less smoothly, and I sure would miss your wisdom. Burn me, but I would. A man needs friends he can trust, and I'd trust you with my life any day.
Why, Matrim, Tom said, looking up, eyes glimmering with mirth. Bolstering a man's spirits when he's down? convincing him to stay and do what is important rather than running off to seek adventure? That sounds downright responsible. What's gotten into you?
Matt grimaced. Marriage, I guess. Burn me, but I'm not going to stop drinking or gambling.
Ahead, Talmanis turned around and glanced at Matt, then rolled his eyes. Tom laughed, watching Talmanis.
Well, lad, I didn't mean to get your spirits down. Just idle talk. I still have a few things I can show this world. If I really can free Moraine, well, we'll see. Besides, somebody needs to be here to watch, then put this all to song someday. There will be more than one ballad that comes from all of this.
He turned, rifling through his saddlebags.
Ah, he said, pulling out his patchwork gleeman's cloak.
He threw it on with a flourish. Well, Matt said, when you write about us, you might find a few gold marks in it if you saw your way to include a nice verse about Talmanis. You know something about how he has one eye that stares in strange directions and how he often carries this scent about him, which reminds one of a goat pen.
I heard that, Talmanis called from ahead.
I meant you to, Matt called back. Tom just laughed, plucking at his cloak, arranging it for best display.
I can't promise anything, he chuckled some more. Though if you don't mind, Matt, I think I'll separate from the rest of you once we get into the village. A gleeman's ears may pick up information that won't be spoken in the presence of soldiers.
Information would be nice, Matt said, rubbing his chin. The trail turned up ahead. Bannon said they'd find the village just beyond the turn. I feel as though I've been traveling through a tunnel for months now, with no sight or sound of the world outside. Burn me, but it would be nice to know where Rand is, if only to know where not to go.
The colors spun, showing him Rand, but the man was standing in a room with no view of the outside, giving Matt no clue as to where he might be.
Life's that tunnel most times, I'm afraid, Tom said. People expect a gleeman to bring information, so we pull it out and brush it off for display. But much of the news we tell is just another batch of stories, in many cases less true than the ballads from 1,000 years ago.
Matt nodded.
And, Tom added, I'll see if I can dig up hints for the incursion.
The Tower of Genji. Matt shrugged.
We're more likely to find what we need in Four Kings or Camelin.
Yes, I know, but Olva made me promise to check. If you hadn't said Noel to keeping the boy distracted, I'd expect to open our saddlebags and find him in there. He really wanted to come.
A night dancing and gambling is no place for a boy, Matt muttered. I just wish I could trust the men back at camp not to corrupt him worse than a tavern would.
Well, he stayed back quietly enough once Noel got out the board.
Olver was convinced that if he played snakes and foxes enough, he'd pick out some secret strategy for defeating the Aelfin and Aelfin.
The lad still thinks he's coming with us into the tower, Tom said more quietly. He knows he can't be one of the three, but he plans to wait outside for us. Maybe burst in to save us if we don't come back soon enough. I don't want to be there when he discovers the truth.
I don't intend to be there myself, Matt said.
Ahead, the trees broke wide into a small valley with green pastures rising high along the hills to the sides. A town of several hundred buildings was nestled between the slopes, a mountain stream running down the middle. The houses were of deep gray stone, each with a prominent chimney, most of which curled with smoke. The roofs were sloped to deal with what were probably very snowy winters, though the only white still visible now was on distant peaks. Workers were already busy on several of the roofs, replacing winter-damaged shingles, and goats and sheep grazed the hillsides, watched over by shepherd boys. There were a few hours of light remaining, and other men worked on shop fronts and fences. Others strolled through the streets of the village, no urgency in their gait. Overall, the little town had a relaxing air of mixed industry and laziness. Matt pulled up beside Talmanis and the soldiers.
That's a nice sight, Talmanis noted. I was beginning to think every town in the world was either falling apart, packed with refugees, or under the thumb of invaders. At least this one doesn't seem likely to vanish on us.
Lights send it so, Matt said, shivering, thinking of the town in Altara that had vanished. Anyway, let's hope they don't mind dealing with a few strangers. He eyed the soldiers. All five were red arms, among the best he had. Three of you five go with the Aes Sedai. I suspect they'll want to stay at a different inn from myself. We'll meet up in the morning. The soldiers saluted, and Jolene sniffed as she passed on her horse, pointedly not looking at Matt. She and the others headed down the incline in a little cluster, three of Matt's soldiers following.
That looks like an inn there, Tom said, pointing toward a larger building on the eastern side of the village. You'll find me there.
He waved, then kicked his mount into a trot and rode on ahead, Gleeman's cloak streaming. Arriving first would give him the best chance at a dramatic entrance. Matt glanced at Telmanis, who shrugged. The two of them made their way down the slope with two soldiers as an escort. Because of the bend in the road, they were approaching from the southwest. To the northeast of the village, the ancient roadway continued. It looked strange to have such a large road leading past a village like this, even if that road was old and broken. Master Roydell claimed that it would lead them straight up into Andor. It was too uneven to be used as a major highway, and the direction it led no longer passed major cities, so it had been forgotten. Matt blessed their luck in finding it, though. The main passages into Murundi had been crowded with Seanchan. According to Roydell's maps, Hinderstap specialized in producing goat's cheese and mutton for the various towns and manor lands in the region. The villagers should be used to outsiders. Indeed, several boys came running from the fields the moment they spotted Tom and his Gleeman's cloak. He'd make a stir, but a familiar one. The Aes Sedai, though, would be memorable. Ah, well, he thought as he and Telmanis rode down the grass-lined road. He would retain his good humor. This time he would not let the Aes Sedai ruin it. By the time Matt and Telmanis reached the village, Tom had already gathered a small crowd. He stood upright on his saddle and juggled three colored balls in his right hand while talking of his travels in the south. The villagers here wore vests and green cloaks of a deep velvety cloth. They looked warm, though upon closer inspection Matt noticed that many of them, cloaks, vests, and trousers, had been torn and carefully mended. Another group of people, mostly women, had gathered around the Aes Sedai. Good. Matt had half expected the villagers to be frightened. One of those standing at the side of Tom's group eyed Matt and Telmanis appraisingly. He was a sturdy fellow with thick arms and linen sleeves that were rolled to the elbows despite the chill spring air. His arms curled with dark hair that matched his beard and the locks on his head.
You have the look of a lord about you, the man said, approaching Matt.
He's a pri-
Telmanis began before Matt cut him off hastily.
I suppose I do at that, Matt said, keeping an eye on Telmanis.
I'm Barldon, the mayor here, the man said, folding his arms. You're welcome to come and trade. Be aware that we don't have much to spare.
Surely you at least have some cheese, Telmanis said. That's what you produce, isn't it?
All that hasn't molded or spoiled is needed for our custom, Mayor Barldon said. That's just the way of things these days.
He hesitated.
But if you have cloth or clothing you'll trade, we might be able to scrape something up to feed you for the day.
Feed us for a day, Matt thought? All 11 of us? He'd need to bring a wagon load back at least, not to mention the ale he'd promised his men.
You'll still need to hear about the curfew. Trade, warm yourselves by the hearths for a time, but know that all outsiders must be out of the town by nightfall.
Matt glanced up at the cloud-covered sky.
But that's barely 3 hours away.
Those are our rules, Barldon said curtly.
It's ridiculous, Jolene said, turning away from the village women.
She nudged her horse a little closer to Matt and Telmanis, her warders, as always, shadowing her.
Master Barldon, we cannot agree to this foolish prohibition. I understand your hesitation during these dangerous times,
but surely you can see that your rules should not apply here.
The man kept his arms folded and said nothing. Jolene pursed her lips, rearranging her hands on her reins, so that her great serpent ring was prominently visible.
Does the symbol of the White Tower mean so little these days?
We respect the White Tower.
Barlton looked at Matt. He was wise. Meeting the gaze of an Aes Sedai tended to make one's resolve weaken.
But our rules are strict, m'lady. I'm sorry.
Jolene sniffed.
I suspect that your innkeepers are less than satisfied with this requirement. How are they to make ends meet if they can't rent rooms to travelers?
The inns are compensated, the mayor said gruffly. 3 hours. Do your business and be on your way. We mean to be friendly to all who pass our way, but we can't see our rules broken.
With that, he turned and left. As he walked away, he was joined by a small group of burly men, several carrying axes. Not threateningly, casually, as if they'd been out chopping wood, and just happened to be walking through town. Together, in the same direction as the mayor.
I should say this is quite the welcome, Talmanis muttered.
Matt nodded. At that moment, the dice started rattling in his head.
Burn it.
He decided to ignore them. They were never any help anyway. Let's go find a tavern, he said, heeling Pips forward.
Still determined to make a night of it, eh? Talmanis said, smiling as he joined Matt.
We'll see,
Matt said, listening to those dice despite himself.
We'll see.
Matt spotted 3 inns on his initial ride through the village. There was one at the end of the main thoroughfare, and it had 2 bright lanterns burning out front, even though night hadn't yet fallen. Those whitewashed walls and clean glass windows would draw the Aes Sedai like moths to a flame. That would be the inn for traveling merchants and dignitaries unfortunate enough to find themselves in these hills. But outsiders couldn't stay the night now. How long had that prohibition been in place? How did these inns maintain themselves? They could still provide a bath and meal, but without renting rooms. Matt didn't buy the mayor's comment about inns being compensated. If they weren't doing anything useful for the village, why pay them? It was just plain odd. Anyway, Matt didn't head for the nice inn, nor the one Tom had chosen. That one wasn't on the main road, but was on a wide street just to the northeast. It would serve the average visitor, respectable men and women who didn't like to spend what they didn't have to. The building was well cared for, the beds would be clean, and the meals satisfactory. The locals would visit for drinks on occasion, mostly when they felt that their wives were keeping a close eye on them. The last inn would have been the most difficult to find had Matt not known where to look for it. It was 3 streets out from the center, in the back west corner of the village. No sign hung out front, just a wooden board carved with what looked like a drunken horse that sat inside one of the windows. None of those windows had glass. Light and laughter came from inside. Most outsiders would have been made uncomfortable by the lack of an inviting sign and street lanterns near this inn. It was really more of a tavern than an inn. Matt doubted if it had ever held anything other than a few pallets in the back that one could rent for a copper. This was the place for working locals to relax. With evening approaching, many would have already made their way here. It was a place for community and for relaxation, a place for smoking a pinch of tobacco with your friends, and for throwing a few games of dice. Matt smiled and dismounted, then hitched Pips to the post outside. Talmanis sighed.
You realize that they probably water their drinks?
Then we'll have to order twice as many, Matt said, undoing a few bags of coins from his saddle and stuffing them in pockets inside his coat.
He gestured for his soldiers to stay and guard the horses. The pack animal carried a coin chest. It contained Matt's personal stash. He wouldn't risk the band's wages on gambling.
All right, then, Talmanis said. But you realize that I'm going to make certain that you and I go to a proper tavern once we reach 4 Kings.
I'll have you educated yet, Matt. You're a prince now. You'll need...
Matt held up a hand, cutting Telmanis off. Then he pointed at the post. Telmanis sighed again and slid free of the saddle, then hitched his horse. Matt stepped up to the tavern door, took a deep breath, and entered. Men crowded around tables, their cloaks draped over chairs or hung on pegs, their ripped and resewn vests unbuttoned, their sleeves rolled up. Why did people here wear clothing that was once so nice, yet now torn and patched? They had plenty of sheep, and should therefore have wool to spare. Matt ignored the oddity for the moment. The men in this place played at dice, drank mugs of ale off of sticky tables, and slept at the backsides of passing barmaids. They seemed exhausted, many of their eyes drooping with fatigue. But that was to be expected after a day's work. Despite the tired eyes, there was an almost palpable chatter in the room, voices overlapping one another in low, rumbling murmurs. A few people looked up as Matt entered, and some of them frowned at his nice clothing, but most people paid him no heed. Telmanis followed reluctantly, but he wasn't the type of nobleman who minded rubbing shoulders with those of lower station. He'd visited his share of seedy taverns in his time, even if he had taken to complaining about Matt's choices. And so Telmanis was as quick as Matt to pull a chair up to a table where a few men already sat. Matt smiled broadly and flashed gold, tossing it to the passing barmaid and demanding some drinks. That got some attention, both from those around the table and from Telmanis.
"What are you doing?" Telmanis hissed, leaning toward Matt. "You want to see us slit open the moment we stumble out of here?"
Matt just smiled. One of the nearby tables had a dice game going. Looked like Cat's Paw, or at least that's what it had been called the night Matt had first been taught it. They called it Third Gem in Ebudar, and he'd heard it called Feathers Aloft in Kyrian. It was the perfect game for his purposes. There was only one dicer in the game, with the crowd of onlookers betting against or for his tosses. Matt took a deep breath, then pulled his chair over to the table, snapping a gold crown onto the wood directly in the center of a wet ring of ale made by the bottom of a mug, now held by a short fellow who'd lost most of his mousy hair, but what he did have hung long down around his collar. He almost choked on his ale.
"Care if I make a throw?" Matt said to the table's occupants.
"I don't know if we can match that," said a man with a short black beard.
"Milord," he added belatedly.
"My gold against your silver," Matt said lightly. "I haven't had a good game of dice in ages."
Telmanis pulled his chair over, interested. He'd seen Matt do this before, putting down gold coins and winning silvers. Matt's luck made up for the difference, and he always came out far ahead. Sometimes he could come out ahead playing gold for coppers. That didn't make him much money. It only took so long before the men involved either ran out of coin or decided to stop playing, and Matt would be left with a handful of silvers and nobody to dice with. That wouldn't help. The army had plenty of coin. It needed food. And so it was time to try something different. Several of the men set down silver coins. Matt shook the dice in his hands, then tossed. Blessedly, the dice came up with one showing a single pip and the other showing two. An instant loss. Telmanis blinked, and the men around the table glanced at Matt, looking chagrined, as if embarrassed to have bet against a lord who obviously wasn't expecting to lose. That was an easy way to get oneself in trouble.
"Well, look at that," Matt said. "Guess you win. It's yours."
He rolled the gold crown to the center of the table, to be split among the men who had bet against him, as per the rules.
"How about another?"
Matt said, slapping down two gold crowns. There were more takers this time. Again he threw and lost, nearly sending Telmanis into a choking fit. Matt had lost throws before. It happened even to him. But two throws in a row? He sent the two crowns rolling, and then he pulled out four. Telmanis placed a hand on his arm.
"No offense, Matt," the man said in a quiet voice. "But maybe you should stop. Everyone has an off night. Let's finish our drinks and go buy what supplies we can before night falls."
Matt just smiled and watched as the bets piled up against his four coins. He had to lay down a fifth, since so many people wanted in on the toss. He ignored Telmanis and threw, losing yet again. Telmanis groaned, then reached over and took a mug from the serving girl who had finally arrived to fill Matt's order. "Don't look so grim," Matt said softly, hefting the pouch in his hand as he reached for his own mug. "This is what I wanted." Telmanis raised an eyebrow, lowering his mug. Matt said, "I can lose when I want to, if it's for the best." "How can losing be for the best?" Telmanis asked, watching the men argue about how to divide Matt's gold. "Wait." Matt took a slurp of ale. It was as watered down as Telmanis had feared. Matt turned back to the table, counting out a few more gold coins. As the time passed, more and more people began gathering around the table. Matt made sure to win a few tosses, just as he had to lose a bit when spending a night winning. He didn't want to arouse any suspicions about his losing streak. Yet bit by bit, the coins in his pouches ended up in the hands of the men playing against him. Before long, all was silent in the tavern, men crowding around Matt and waiting their turn to bet against him. Sons and friends had run to grab their fathers and cousins, dragging them to the tipsy gelding, as the inn was called. At one point, during a break in the throes while Matt was waiting for another mug of ale, Telmanis pulled him aside. "I don't like this, Matt," the wiry man said in a low voice, leaning in. Sweat had long since streaked the powder on his shaved forehead, and he'd wiped it away, leaving the skin bare. "I told you," Matt took a swig of watery ale. "I know what I'm doing." Men cheered to the side as one of them drank three mugs, one after another. The air smelt of sweat and muddy ale, spilled to the wood floor, then trampled by the boots of those arriving from the pastures. "Not that," Telmanis said, glancing at the cheering men. "You can waste your coin if you want to, so long as you spare a few coins to buy me a drink now and then. That's not what's bothering me. Not anymore." Matt frowned. "What?" "Something feels wrong about these folk, Matt." Telmanis spoke very softly, glancing over his shoulder. "While you've been playing, I've been talking to them. They don't care about the world. The Dragon Reborn, the Seanchan, nothing. Not a care." "So?" Matt said. "They're simple folk." "Simple folk should worry even more," Telmanis said. "They're trapped here between gathering armies. But these just shrug when I talk, then drink some more. It's as if they're too focused on their revelry, as if it's all that matters to them." "Then they're perfect," Matt said. "It'll be dark soon," Telmanis said, glancing at the window. "We've used an hour, probably more. Maybe we should..." At that moment, the door of the inn slammed open, and the burly mayor entered, accompanied by the men who had joined him earlier, although they had left their axes behind. They didn't look pleased to find half the village inside the tavern gambling with Matt. "Matt?" Telmanis began again. Matt raised a hand, cutting him off. "This is what we've been waiting for." "It is?" Telmanis asked. Matt turned back to the dicing table, smiling. He'd gone through most of his bags of coins, but he had enough for a few more throws, not counting what he'd brought along outside, of course. He picked up the dice and counted out some gold crowns, and the crowd began to throw down coins of their own, many of which by now were gold ones they'd won from Matt. He tossed and lost, causing a roar of excitement from those watching. Barlden looked as if he wanted to toss Matt out. It was getting late, and sunset couldn't be far off, but the man hesitated when he saw Matt pull out another handful of gold coins. Greed nibbled every man, and strict rules could be bent if opportunity walked past and winked suggestively enough. Matt tossed again and lost. More roars. The mayor folded his arms. Matt reached into his pouch and found nothing but air. The men around him looked crestfallen, and one called for a round of drinks to help the poor young lord forget about his luck. "Not bloody likely," Matt thought, covering a smile. He stood up, raising his hands. "I see it's getting late," he said to the room.
"Too late," Barlden interjected, pushing past a few smelly goat herds with fur-collared cloaks. "You should be going, Outlander. Don't be thinking I'll make these men give back what you lost to them fairly, either."
"I wouldn't dream of it," Matt said, slurring his words just a tad.
"Harnan and Dalarn," he bellowed. "Bring in the chest."
The two soldiers from outside hurried in a moment later, bearing the small wooden chest from the pack horse. The tavern grew silent as the soldier carried it over to the table and set it down. Matt fished out the key, wobbling slightly, then unlocked the lid and revealed the contents. Gold. A lot of it. Practically all he had left of his personal coin.
"There's time for one more throw," Matt said to a stunned room. "Any takers?"
Men began to toss down coins until the pile contained most of what Matt had lost. It wasn't nearly enough to match what was in his chest. He looked it over, tapping his chin.
"That's not going to be enough, friends. I'll take a bad bet, but if I've only got one more throw tonight, I want a chance of walking out of here with something." "It's all we've got," one of the men said,
amid a few calls for Matt to go ahead and toss anyway. Matt sighed, then closed the lid to the chest.
"No," he said.
Even Barlden was watching with a gleam in his eyes.
"Unless," Matt paused. "I came here for supplies. I guess I'd take barter. You can keep the coins you won, but I'll bet this chest for supplies. Foodstuffs for my men. A few casks of ale. A cart to carry it on."
"There isn't enough time."
Barlden glanced at the darkening windows.
"Surely there is," Matt said, leaning forward. "I'll leave after this toss. You have my word on it."
"We don't bend rules here," the mayor said. "The price is too high."
Matt expected calls from the betting men, challenging the mayor, begging them to make an exception. But there were none. Matt felt a sudden spike of fear. After all of that losing, if they kicked him out anyway. Desperate, he pulled open the top of the chest again, revealing the gold coins inside.
"I'll give you the ale," the innkeeper said suddenly. "And Mardry, you've got a wagon and team. It's only down the street."
"Yes," said Mardry, a bluff-faced man with short dark hair. "I'll bet that."
Men began to call that they could offer food, grain from their pantries, potatoes from their cellars. Matt looked at the mayor.
"There's still gotta be what, half an hour until nightfall? Why don't we see what they can gather? The village store can have a piece of this too if I lose. I'll bet you could use the extra coin, what with the winner we had."
Barlden hesitated, then nodded, still watching the chest of coins. Men whooped and ran about, fetching the wagon, rolling out the ale. More than a few galloped off for their homes or the village store. Matt watched them go, waiting in the quickly emptying tavern room.
"I see what you're doing," the mayor said to Matt. He didn't seem to be in a rush to gather anything.
Matt turned toward him questioningly.
"I won't have you cheating us with a miracle win at the end of the evening." Barlden folded his arms. "You'll use my dice, and you'll move nice and slow as you toss. I know you lost many games here as the men report, but I suspect that if we search you, we'll find a couple of sets of dice hidden on your person."
"You're welcome to give me a search," Matt said, raising his arms to the side.
Barlden hesitated.
"You will have thrown them away, of course," he finally said. "It's a fine scheme, dressing like a lord, loading dice so they make you lose instead of win. Never heard of a man bold enough to throw away gold like that on fake dice."
"If you're so certain that I'm cheating," Matt said, "then why go through with this?"
"Because I know how to stop you," the mayor replied. "Like I said, you'll use my dice on this throw."
He hesitated, then smiled, grabbing a pair of dice off the table that Matt had been using. He tossed them. They came up a one and a two. He tossed them again and got the same result.
Better yet, the mayor smiled deeply. You'll use these. In fact, I'll make the throw for you.
Barlden's face in the dim light took on a decidedly sinister cast. Matt felt a stab of panic. Tolmanis took his arm.
All right, Matt, he said. I think we should go.
Matt held up a hand. Would his luck work if someone else threw? Sometimes it worked to prevent him from being wounded in combat. He was sure of that. Wasn't he?
Go ahead, he said to Barlden.
The man looked shocked.
You can make the throw, Matt said. But it counts the same as if I'd tossed. A winning hand and I walk away with everything. A losing hand, and I'll be on my way with my hat and my horse, and you can keep the bloody chest. Agreed?
Agreed.
Matt stuck out his hand for a shake, but the mayor turned away, holding the dice in his hand.
No, he said. You'll get no chance to swap these dice, traveler. Let's just go out front and wait. And you keep your distance.
They did as he said, leaving the muggy, ale-soaked stench of the tavern for the clear street outside. Matt's soldiers brought the chest. Barlden demanded that the chest remain open so that it couldn't be switched. One of his thugs poked around inside it, biting the coins, making certain that it really was full and that the coins were authentic. Matt waited, leaning against the door as a wagon rolled up, and men from inside the tavern began rolling casks of ale onto its bed. The sun was barely a haze of light on the horizon behind those blasted clouds. As Matt waited, he saw the mayor grow more and more anxious. Blood and bloody ashes, the man was a stickler for his rules. Well, Matt would show him, and all of them. He'd show them... Show them what? That he couldn't be beaten? What did that prove? As Matt waited, the cart piled higher and higher with foodstuffs, and he began to feel a strange sense of guilt. I'm not doing anything wrong, he thought. I've got to feed my men, don't I? These men are betting fair, and I'm betting fair. No loaded dice, no cheating. Except his luck. Well, his luck was his own, just as every man's luck was his own. Some men were born with a talent for music, and they became bards and gleemen. Who begrudged them earning coin with what the Creator gave them? Matt had luck, and so he used it. There was nothing wrong with that. Still, as the men came back into the inn, he started to see what it was that Tolmanis had noticed. There was an edge of desperation to these men. Had they been too eager to gamble? Had they been foolhardy with their betting? What was that look in their eyes, a look that Matt had mistaken for weariness? Had they been drinking to celebrate the end of the day, or had they been drinking to banish that haunted cast in their eyes? Maybe you were right, Matt said to Tolmanis, who was watching the sun with almost as much anxiety as the mayor. Its last light was dusting the tops of the peaked homes, coloring the tan tile a deeper orange. The sunset was ablaze behind the clouds.
We can go, then? Tolmanis asked.
No, Matt said. We're staying. And the dice stopped rattling in his head. It was so sudden, the silence so unexpected, that he froze. It was enough to make him think he'd made the wrong decision. Burn me, we're staying, he repeated. I've never backed down from a bet before, and I don't plan to now. A group of riders returned, bearing sacks of grain on their horses. It was amazing what a little coin could do for motivation. As more riders arrived, a young boy came trotting up the road.
Mayor,
he said, tugging on Barlden's purple vest. That vest bore a crisscross of patched rips across the front.
Mother says that the Outlander women aren't done bathing. She's trying to hurry them, but...
The mayor tensed. He glanced at Matt angrily. Matt snorted.
Don't think I can do anything to hurry that lot, he said. If I were to go rush them, they'd likely dig in like mules and take twice as long. Let somebody else bloody have a turn dealing with them.
Tolmanis kept glancing at the lengthening shadows along the road.
Burn me, he muttered. If those ghosts start appearing again, Matt,
This is something else, Matt said as the newcomers threw their grain onto the wagon. It feels different. The wagon was already loaded high with foodstuffs, a good haul to have purchased from a village this size. It was just what the band needed, enough to nudge them along, keep them fed until they reached the next town. That food wasn't worth the gold in the coffer, of course, but it was about equal to what he'd lost dicing inside, particularly with the wagon and horses thrown in. They were good draft animals, sturdy, well cared for from the look of coat and hoof. Matt opened his mouth to say it was enough, then hesitated as he noticed that the mayor was talking quietly with a group of men. There were six of them, their vests drab and ragged, their black hair unkempt. One was gesturing toward Matt and holding what looked to be a sheet of paper in his hand. Barlden shook his head, but the man with the paper gestured more insistently. "Here now," Matt said softly. "What's this?"
"Matt, the sun," Telmanis said.
The mayor pointed sharply and the ragged men sidled away. The men who had brought the food were crowding around the dimming street, keeping to the center of it. Most were looking toward the horizon.
"Mayor," Matt called, "that's good enough. Make the throw."
Barlden hesitated, glancing at him, then looked down at the dice in his hand almost as if he'd forgotten them. The men around him nodded anxiously, and so he raised his hand in a fist, rattling the dice. The mayor looked across the street to meet Matt's eyes, then threw the dice onto the ground between them. They seemed too loud, a tiny rattling thunderstorm, like bones cracking against one another. Matt held his breath. It had been a long while since he'd had reason to worry about a toss of the dice. He leaned down, watching the white cubes tumble against the dirt. How would his luck react to someone else throwing? The dice came to a stop. A pair of fours. An outright winning throw. Matt released a long, relieved breath, though he felt a trickle of sweat down his temple.
"Matt,"
Telmanis said softly, making him look up. The men standing on the road didn't look so pleased. Several of them cheered in excitement until their friends explained that a winning throw from the mayor meant that Matt would take the prize. The crowd grew tense. Matt met Barlden's eyes.
"Go," the burly man said, gesturing in disgust toward Matt and turning away. "Take your spoils and leave this place. Never return."
"Well," Matt said, relaxing. "Thank you kindly for the game, then. We..."
"Go!"
the mayor bellowed. He looked at the last slivers of sunlight on the horizon, then cursed and began waving for the men to enter the tipsy gelding. Some lingered, glancing at Matt with shock or hostility, but the mayor's urgings soon bullied them into the low-roofed inn. He pulled the door shut and left Matt, Telmanis, and the two soldiers standing alone on the street. It suddenly seemed eerily quiet. There wasn't a villager on the street. Shouldn't there be some noise from inside the tavern, at least? Some clinking of mugs, some grumbling about the lost wager?
"Well," Matt said, voice echoing against silent house fronts, "I guess that's that."
He walked over to Pips, calming the horse who had begun to shuffle nervously.
"Now, see, I told you, Telmanis, nothing to be worried about at all."
And that's when the screaming began.